Hello, it is Friday, March 24th, 2023. I'm Charlie Shine, and reading the front pages of the Hartford Current and the New York Times with me today is Bill Murphy. We're going to start by taking a look at the pictures on the front page of the New York Times, then jump over to Bill, get a look at the pictures on the front page of the Current, and then get our first story. Taking a look at the New York Times today, "No escaping war, even in their dreams," is the caption. A year into the Russian invasion, a survey asked hundreds of Ukrainians what they saw while asleep. Violence, many said. And the picture itself, it's actually sort of a peaceful photo of a city in Ukraine, doesn't say which one. And it's dark and it looks calm. As we move on below the fold, Brother Consolmagno, director of the Vatican's observatory in Rome, is an asteroid honoree, and it's a picture of him looking through, it looks like a telescope in the Vatican, as I'm assuming it's the Vatican. As we move over, a photo of Shou Chu, the chief executive of TikTok. He testified in before Congress yesterday. We're going to be taking a look at that story a little bit later on. The thumbnail photo is on the bottom of the page from the international section, "Constant Conflict and Repairs." Artisans at the Aqaba Mosque compound in Jerusalem complain of Israeli interference as they fix damage. The photo itself, a picture of a gentleman doing exactly that, fixing damage at, looks like, the mosque. As we move on over, a photo from the weekend section, a new pair of glass slippers. Jesse Green has some suggestions for people going to Andrew Lloyd Webber's Bad Cinderella with Lindy Janeiro and Jordan Dobin. And it's a picture of both of those actors above. It's just they're in an embrace on stage. And that's it for the pictures in the front page of the New York Times. Now we'll jump over to Bill, get pictures in the front page of the Current and our first story. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Charlie. There are two pictures on the front page of the Hartford Current. One is a picture of the Speaker of the House, Matt Ritter. He's a Democrat of Hartford, and he's giving a high five to New Britain Mayor Aaron Stewart after a news conference at the Capitol on Thursday about the future of Battison Park, which is owned by Hartford and partly located in New Britain. And he is there on the left. They're high-fiving each other. In the background, there are three people. I believe one of them is Mayor Luke Bronin. It doesn't say in the caption, but I do recognize him. The other picture, a small one at the bottom of the page, is a picture of Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg arriving at his office Thursday. He is investigating Donald Trump, and he's walking with his briefcase into the building. I do not believe we're going to have a story on that, but we will start with a story from the World and Nation section of the Current, and that's from Ottawa, Ontario. President Joe Biden headed to Canada on Thursday night with a focus on several of the world's largest challenges: the war in Ukraine, climate change, trade, mass migration, and an increasing assertive China. Two important areas of agreement appeared in hand even before Air Force One touched down. Canada will escalate its timeline for military upgrades to the North American Aerospace Defense Command, and the two nations will reach an agreement on migration, a senior Canadian official said. The Biden administration has made strengthening its friendship with Canada a priority over the past 2 years, and Biden's meetings with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in the capital of Ottawa are an opportunity to set plans for the future. National security and air defenses are a priority, with a recent Chinese spy balloon floating over North America putting newfound urgency on Canada's plans to update its radar systems and recent purchase of F-35 jets. Canada has agreed to an accelerated timeline for spending billions more on upgrades for NORAD, which monitors the skies above the continent, according to the senior Canadian government official. Canada announced last year it is investing $3.8 billion over the next 6 years to modernize NORAD radar systems and billions more years later. But David Cohen, the U.S. ambassador to Canada, has said the current threat climate calls for earlier investment. There's also agreement to close a key loophole that has allowed thousands of migrants to cross into Canada from the U.S. at a non-official checkpoint, enabling them to stay in the country as they seek asylum instead of letting the process play out while staying in the U.S. That's according to the official who spoke on the condition of anonymity because the official wasn't authorized to speak on the record. A quirk in a 2002 agreement between the U.S. and Canada says people seeking asylum must apply in the first country they arrive in. Migrants who go to an official crossing are returned to the U.S. and told to apply there. But those who arrive in Canada at a location other than a port of entry are allowed to stay and request protection, as has been happening to Roxham Road between Champlain, New York, and Quebec. More than 39,000 claims were filed in 2022 by people who were intercepted by Canadian police, the vast majority of them in Quebec and at Roxham Road. The broadened focus of Biden's visit represents an evolution of a friendship between the two countries that exceeds 150 years. The emphasis had more frequently been on issues like trade that had defined relations between the two countries, which share a 5,525-mile border. This visit is about taking stock of what we've done, where we are, and what we need to prioritize for the future, said John Kirby, a spokesman for the White House National Security Council. We're going to talk about our two democracies stepping up to meet the challenges of our time. There will still be an emphasis on trade, yet Canada and the U.S. see the partnership as crucial in supporting Ukraine against Russia's invasion, reducing their dependence on Chinese goods and shifting toward cleaner energy sources amid the planetary damage caused by burning fossil fuels. It's about strengthening air defenses for both countries, tapping critical minerals that will enable the production of electric vehicles and military and economic commitments at a moment that observers say is the most dangerous since World War II. Chinese President Xi Jinping this week visited Russian President Vladimir Putin, pledging to deepen their economic ties in ways that could help fund Putin's ongoing war to take Ukraine. The ties between the two countries are without parallel. Trade between the U.S. and Canada totaled an estimated record of $950 billion in 2022. Each day, about 400,000 people cross the world's longest international border, and about 800,000 Canadian citizens live in the United States. There is close cooperation on defense, border security, and law enforcement, and a vast overlap in culture, traditions, and pastimes. Charlie?
Thanks, Bill. Training West Africa to fight terrorists by land and sea. This from the international section of the New York Times. From Ghana, troops clad in black jumped out of motorboats near a riverside resort and made their way along a wood slat fence to their objective, a building where terrorists had seized a high-level government official. Shots rang out and the troops returned fire. They soon emerged from the one-story structure with the freed hostage, who was wearing a blood-stained white robe. An ambulance drove up and the man was strapped to a gurney and taken away. The scene along the Volta River in Ghana ended in success for the military forces, but on this day, the shots that were fired were blanks. The hostage was pretend, and the rescuers, 31 soldiers and sailors, soon lined up for applause from a U.S. Navy admiral and a coterie of commandos from more than a dozen nations as the largest annual special operations exercise in Africa came to an end. The two-week U.S.-led event, called Flintlock and held in Ghana and Ivory Coast this year, had focused exclusively on land-based operations since it began in 2005. But the waterborne mission included this time a location about a dozen miles upriver from the coast, reflects rising concern about security in the Gulf of Guinea, where pirates and other armed groups have exploited the inability of many West African nations to protect international waters. U.S. and Guam and Ghanaian officials said. The Gulf of Guinea is like the wild, wild west of illicit activity, especially the drug trade, said General Michael E. Langley, the commander of U.S. Africa Command, said in a meeting of the Senate Armed Services Committee last week. After Flintlock had ended, we had a number of countries that came together to focus on illicit activity across the Gulf, and the drug trade is one of them. Smuggling is another, transiting citizens as well across that region. When President George W. Bush announced the creation of the U.S. Africa Command in 2007, he said he hoped it would help bring peace and security to the people of Africa and promote humanitarian efforts as well as democracy and economic growth on the continent. Almost 16 years later, though, the addition of naval operations to the exercise, specifically the boarding and seizure of hostile vessels, shows that Africa Command's list of tasks has only grown longer and more complicated. And Flintlock, which involved 700 soldiers from 10 countries in 2005, including 1,300 from 29 nations this year. The United States and its allies in the region say Flintlock and similar events will help build a bulwark against terrorist groups that have swept south from Mali in recent years and spread across the Sahel and now threaten the coastal states of West Africa. France, a former colonial power in some of the nations involved, deployed forces to battle Islamist terrorist groups in the region a year ago. But that mission, which numbered 5,000 soldiers at its height, has largely been terminated. In January, the government of Burkina Faso asked French troops there to leave as relations between the two countries deteriorated. This part of West Africa has experienced profound upheaval since the last full-scale Flintlock took place in 2020. It was canceled in 2021 because of COVID-19 and scaled back in 2022. In Burkina Faso, which borders Ghana to the north, the military seized power from the democratically elected president in January 2022, and the leader of that coup was deposed by other military factions in October. In the 18 months prior, there were coups in Guinea and Mali, and to the east in Chad and Sudan as well. Bill.
Thank you, Charlie. From Kyiv, Ukraine. Ukraine's president Thursday made his third visit in 2 days to areas that have felt the brunt of Russia's war, with a trip to the southern Kherson region that was retaken from the Kremlin's forces, and as a senior Kyiv commander hinted that a brewing Ukrainian counteroffensive could come very soon. Ukraine took back control of the Kherson region's capital, also called Kherson, at the end of last year, pushing out the Russian occupiers who had captured the city in the weeks following the start of Moscow's full-scale invasion more than a year ago. The Dnieper River now marks the front line in the region, which is still partially occupied. While in Kherson on Thursday, President Volodymyr Zelensky met with local security officials and inspected infrastructure damaged by Russian strikes, his office said. On Wednesday, Zelensky visited Kharkiv, the country's second-largest city in northeastern Ukraine. Kyiv's troops recaptured Kharkiv from the Russians last September as part of the same months-long counter-offensive that won back at Kherson. Also Wednesday, Zelensky met with troops in the eastern Donetsk region, stopping by a hospital to see wounded soldiers and giving state awards to the defenders of Bakhmut, a wrecked city that is now a symbol of Ukraine's dogged resistance against Russian against Russian President Vladimir Putin's ambitions. And we're going to go right back to Charlie now.
Okay, thank you. Israeli leader won't give up on court plan. New law adds fuel to widespread protests from Jerusalem. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel defiantly vowed on Thursday to proceed with a divisive judicial overhaul in a move that came just hours after his coalition passed a law making it harder to remove him from office. Mr. Netanyahu, addressing Israelis on primetime television, promised to go ahead next week with plans to give the government greater control over appointments to the Supreme Court, emphatically squashing rumors that had been swirled throughout the day that he was about to back down. His speech capped a day in which thousands of protesters demonstrated across Israel against the plan, leading to confrontations with right-wing supporters of Mr. Netanyahu and clashes with police, who sprayed protesters with water cannons. The address came just minutes after the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, met with Mr. Netanyahu to warn him about the effect the turmoil has had on the military amid speculation that Mr. Gallant himself was about to speak out against the plan. The number of reservists reporting for duty this month has declined, the military confirmed on Wednesday, amid widespread concerns among reservists about the effects of the judiciary plan. The proposal would give the government more control over judicial appointments, weaken the Supreme Court by severely restricting judicial review of legislation, and allow Parliament to override court decisions. The plan by the far-right government has become one of the most controversial domestic issues in Israel's history, sparking weeks of angry protests by opponents who say it would subvert the country's democratic system. Bill.
Thank you, Charlie. At least four of the five members of the commission that oversees the Connecticut Division of Public Defender Services abruptly resigned this week, less than a year after the appointment of Chief Public Defender Tashaun Bowden Lewis. No explanations were given for the resignations that threaten the continued smooth operation of the office that provides state-funded defense attorneys for indigent defendants in the state criminal courts. A half dozen lawyers who interact regularly with the public defenders said that they have been told the resignations were the result of what have become intractable disagreements between Bowden Lewis and the board that hired her over her decisions concerning hiring, management, and spending. Bowden Lewis, the first Black woman to be appointed as the state's chief public defender, has retained a private lawyer to represent her. Attorney General William Tong has hired another law firm to investigate allegations made within the public defender's office. A spokesman for Tong said she would not elaborate on the allegations. Bowden Lewis and others in her office did not respond to repeated calls for information about the resignations and whether they would affect the work of the office. The commission members also did not respond to repeated calls. Governor Ned Lamont's office said he planned to work quickly to see that the newly vacant seats on the commission are filled. A spokesman for the governor said he is not aware of the reasons behind the resignations. We are going to work with our other appointing authorities to make sure that operations continue, spokesman Adam Joseph said. Appointments to the five-member commission are divided among the governor, the leaders of the state Senate and House of Representatives, and the state judiciary. Those who resigned are Chairman Allison M. Neer, a lawyer in private practice in New Haven, appointed by the governor, Superior Court Judges Laura F. Baldini and Kevin S. Russo, appointed by the state's Chief Justice, and Amy C. Goldberg, a licensed social worker from West Hartford, who had been a commission member since her appointment by former Senate President Kevin Sullivan in 2004. It was unclear whether the fifth commission member, former State Representative William R. Dyson of New Haven, appointed by the House leadership, remains on the commission. None of the commission members responded to repeated phone calls. In a resignation letter to Chief Justice Richard A. Robinson, Baldini hinted at turmoil in the office and said her resignation was made after careful reflection and consideration. Given the present circumstances, if I were to remain as a member of this commission, I would no longer be able to fulfill my statutory obligations. Please contact me if you wish to discuss the substance of this letter, Baldini said. And it's time for the weather. We're going to go to Charlie for the national forecast, and then I will be back with the local forecast.
Thank you, Bill. National forecast from the New York Times. A corridor of heavy rain will extend from the Ozarks in Missouri and Arkansas to the northern side of the Ohio Valley today. Within this zone, urban and flash flooding are certain, followed by secondary river flooding this weekend on the Ohio River and part of the Mississippi River. Severe weather, including the risk of tornadoes, will extend south of the rain to the Tennessee and lower Mississippi valleys. Downpours and thunderstorms will extend east towards the mid-Atlantic coast. Warmth will hold in the southeast as cooler air settles from the Midwest to the northeast. In the west, rain will fall in coastal areas of Washington and Oregon, with snow from the Cascades to the central and southern Rockies. Bill.
All right, thanks, Charlie. Here's the local forecast for today. Partly sunny with a high near 53. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 33. Saturday, a chance of rain, snow, and sleet before 10 a.m., then rain, high near 41. Chance of precipitation is 90%. Little or no accumulation is expected. Saturday night rain, mainly before 3 a.m., low around 37. East wind 8 to 14 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 90%. On Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 57. On Sunday night, mostly clear with a low around 34. Monday, sunny with a high near 52. Monday night, a chance of snow after 2 a.m., partly cloudy with a low around 32. Chance of precipitation is 30%. And on Tuesday, a chance of rain and snow, partly sunny with a high near 50. Chance of precipitation is 40%.